Then we were assigned to various wards in the hospital. We had a certain amount of choice, but largely we were sent to certain wards, and I was very disappointed that I wasn't sent to his ward. So I asked him if it would be possible to come to the diabetic clinics, even though I was on another ward. At that time, there was a Tuesday evening clinic and a Saturday morning clinic, and so he agreed that my husband and I could go along to those clinics. And again, these are things I will never forget. The Saturday morning clinic had dogs coming to the clinic. He was a vet, and the dogs with diabetes, of course, and he adjusted their insulin as well as patients' insulin. It's amazing how many years that went on before the authorities put a stop to it. He also spoke in language which would not be acceptable now, really, to many of his patients. For example, when people said, as they often did when they were told they had diabetes and they would have to inject insulin possibly for the rest of their life unless a cure was found, and the usual response was, no, 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 not me, I couldn't possibly do that, I hate needles. And his reply would be, well, madam, there are a few categories of people who can't inject: those with no hands, those who are completely mentally retarded. Which category would you say you come into? And he would then pull down his trousers, revealing purple underpants, and would stick the needle numerous times in himself to show how easy and simple it was. Most of them really loved that approach. There was the occasional person who was a bit thrown by it, but 99% of people loved him. He took a great interest in them. Another thing I always remember him saying to those who were overweight, they would usually say, I think it's my glands, doctor. And he would say, the only glands that you have a problem with, madam, are the salivary glands. Go down to Gibbs' dog shop and buy yourself a muzzle. Although that seems funny even now, it wasn't many years after that they started wiring people's jaws, which was a rather similar approach. He was very entertaining, very caring, very flamboyant character, and that really confirmed my view that I was going to do diabetes.
How large a part of your training was learning about diabetes?
Well, we did do quite a lot of physiology. In those days, we had lectures. We did quite a lot of pathology, and so we did learn about diabetes in the first few years. And then during the clinical course, I think we had about 10 lectures on diabetes, an awful lot more than they have now. And although we didn't all get to the diabetic clinic, most of us did see patients in the wards.
Anything more about what the clinics were like in the years up until you finished your training in 1965?
Well, I think when I look back now that we're very fortunate. We had a very good diabetic clinic. Edinburgh was the first place in Britain to get insulin, because someone who'd worked with McLeod Best came back from Toronto with insulin very early on and set up a small clinic with just two rooms. But by the time I was in Edinburgh, they had their own, what would now be called, diabetes centre. That goes back to the 1950s. And there were several consulting rooms. There was a dietitian's room. There were three chiropodists. There were rooms for examining eyes. There was an education room. And so we didn't realise at the time, of course. We just thought that's what everybody did. But many years later, when some places were opening diabetes centres, I'm afraid I did rather feel we'd had one all along.
You say there was an education room. Who did the education?
The education was done by both the doctors and the nurses.